In Matthew chapter 5, in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, beginning in verse 38, it reads, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you." This saying is a particularly hard saying that we find in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which really is full of difficult sayings. I want to take some time this evening and focus on the part that Jesus talks about as far as going the extra mile. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. I want to take that concept, take that idea this evening, and see what we can learn from it, see what we can take away, and maybe apply some things to our lives about that concept this evening. If there are those here who are visiting, we want to be sure to welcome you and say that we're thankful for you taking the opportunity to come out and worship with us. If you have any questions or anything about our worship that piques your interest, if you'd like to do any Bible study with us, we'd be glad to talk with you about who we are and what we do and what it takes to become a child of God. If you haven't had a chance to yet, we have a visitor's packet. Looks like this, and you can grab some things in there and fill out a visitor's card. But we're grateful for your presence this evening and look forward to getting to know you. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Going the extra mile is something that we say in our society. It's a common phrase, a common saying for us. And oftentimes it's just talked about as far as doing the extra things, doing the things that go beyond what you're supposed to do. And certainly, I think as we study that this evening, that is part of the idea of what's being talked about here, but that is not fully what Jesus is saying. So just to think about putting yourself in the shoes of a Jewish person listening to Jesus say the Sermon on the Mount, we have to understand some things about what that would have meant for them. The Roman army in the day of the Jews didn't function quite as efficiently as our United States Army functions today. We have the most efficient, most well-structured army probably ever known to history. If our army has needs, they will send requests up the ladders to superiors, and then the superiors will make sure that those needs are met one way or another. Either someone from our army will go over and take care of it because we have a specialist who takes care of whatever need it is they've put in a request for, or if we can't do it from within the army, then we'll find some civilian way of taking care of that problem. But if there is a problem, the army is going to find a way to take care of it. If they need to have problems with transportation or anything of those needs, our army takes care of that. The Romans did not and could not always supply their army with what it needed. And that's also true of ourselves the United States Army takes a civilian company and uses it. They pay that company. They make sure that company is compensated. Well, the Romans sometimes ran into that problem where they couldn't take care of themselves, where they needed to move or do something that they didn't have all the tools or all the resources for. Instead of taking a civilian company and paying them for it, they had a way of getting around that by taking the people in the place where they were occupied and having them help do whatever it was the Roman army needed to do. So if they needed to move their troops, if they needed to move from one city to another, and they needed more labor, more help, then they had the right, the Roman army did, to take you from whatever it was you're doing and have you help them out. That was how they took care of their army. And as you might imagine, many soldiers in the Roman army abused this law. You might in some way think, well, that's what they got to do, and so they need to do it. But this wasn't as well policed as you might think. They could do whatever they wanted. Sometimes they would take people and have them do things that were really unnecessary, a job that they just simply didn't want to do, or a job that really they kind of wanted done, but it wasn't really something that was a necessity. And so they take people and use them and abuse the power that they were given to help them out. And you can imagine that if you were at your job and an army officer came in the morning and said, I'm going to borrow you for the day. I need help, and you're going to help me. And I'm not going to pay you for it. That would be pretty frustrating. Well, of course, these people were primarily agricultural-based. They were a lot of people had skilled trades. Most people weren't business people, and their company's not going to pay them for their time off. If someone called you out of your job in the Army to help them out with something, you probably could find a way to have your company pay you. That's not the case with people that are working on a farm or working in the skilled trades back then. You don't get your day's payback just because a Roman army officer came and took you away. And then on top of that, we might make this a little bit more real to ourselves. Imagine that the Chinese army has come into America and they've taken over. Just this foreign country has come in and the Chinese army has occupied the United States, and a Chinese soldier pulls you aside from your work to perform some menial task that he can do on his own. I want you to tie my shoes or whatever it is that he can do very well on his own. And you see the pointless nature of the task. Not only are you doing something that is pointless, but you're doing it for your enemy. You're doing it to further the cause of the people that are oppressing you, the people that are taking away your rights to live in that land. You're furthering their cause. Everything about that scenario would be wrong. And every one of us would be frustrated and angered at having to be involved in such a scenario. When I started working at the John Deere dealership, my first job was in the shipping department, and we would sometimes transfer inventory from one location to another because different stores had different needs that they needed met. Some serviced different types of tractors more than others, and so on and so forth. So we need some inventory from this store. We'll have them send it to us. Instead of ordering it from John Deere, we'll just do it in between our own stores. And as I was working as a shipping clerk, we had a man who was in charge of taking care of all that. So whatever inventory needed to go to another store, this man would make sure that it went to the right store and so on and so forth. Well, I came to find out after a while that this man was abusing the system because based on the numbers and metrics and whatever it was, I don't know the formulas, but if he got his inventory right in certain places, he got a bonus for it. So he would start moving parts from one place to another just so he could get his bonus. They didn't need the parts. He just wanted to get his quarterly bonus. And so I would see parts come in that I had just sent out. Maybe 1 week ago I sent this part out, and now I see it coming back in. I found that really frustrating because here he is making my job, making me do twice the work that I have to do, making my job unnecessarily burdened. And that was frustrating to me, but I was getting paid for that. I can't imagine being in a scenario where not only am I not getting paid for it, but I'm being oppressed and I'm helping out someone who is hurting me. And if you've ever been in a similar situation, it's not that hard to imagine. Many of us who have worked in the world at some point have undergone some type of situation where someone added a burden on to you for their own benefit. And that's the type of situation that Jesus is talking about when he talks about going the extra mile. That's the type of thing that would have come to the mind of the Jews listening to that. And these are situations, again, where Jesus is talking about where someone's rights are being violated. What they ought to be able to do with their own lives, with their own time, is taken away from them. But Jesus, when he makes this statement, however, he is not asking the people to go to go the extra mile. He is not asking them to be concerned with what is just, with what is fair for them. He's not asking that we be concerned about our own rights. And we live in a country that is so much about our individual rights. And how dare anyone take our rights away from us and do something that is harmful to our rights? That's the last thing that we can imagine enduring. There are certainly times where it is appropriate and where God has provided the means for us to seek justice. When our rights are violated, God has given us governments for that very purpose. If you turn to Romans chapter 13, I'm not going to turn to read that verse, but beginning of Romans 13, particularly in verse 4, Paul talks about how God has placed governments, God himself has put governments in place so that people's rights can be upheld, so that justice can be served. And so we see that it's okay for that to happen. Paul, in the book of Acts, makes sure that his rights are taken care of. As a Roman citizen, he had certain things he was entitled to. In Acts chapter 22 and verse 25, he is about to be scourged. And as a Roman citizen, he had the right to have a hearing about that. You can't just take someone that is a Roman citizen out and scourge them for without having heard a defense for them. And so in Acts 22 and verse 25, when they stretched him out with thongs, Paul said to the centurion who was standing by, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and uncondemned?" He says, "I have a right to a trial, and I'm going to use that right." And so certainly, Jesus is not saying here that you just need to endure for the sake of enduring. You need to suffer just because that's what the Christian life is all about. It's just about suffering, and if someone makes you suffer, then you suffer. That's not the point that Jesus is making, suffering just for suffering's sake. We are allowed to seek for justice when it is appropriate to seek justice, and we see Paul doing the same thing. But with that understanding, however, Christians are not supposed to be so hungry for earthly justice that it gets in the way of showing other people what God's people are supposed to look like. Our number one priority, our number one objective is to glorify our Father in heaven and to show other people what a Christian looks like, to show other people what God wants his people to look like. And if that comes at the expense of our personal liberties and our rights, but it makes God glorified, then so be it. And that's the point that Jesus is making. And that's the point that we see illustrated in Jesus' life. And we see that point illustrated in Paul's life as well. The extra mile, Paul certainly understood this concept. And while he did take a chance to seek justice when it was necessary to allow his rights to go down the drain, so to speak, he was okay with that as long as it glorified God. And so in 1 Thessalonians, in his epistle to the Thessalonians, in chapter 2, beginning in verse 9, Paul says to them, "For you recall, brethren, our labor and hardship, how working night and day so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and so is God, how devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we behave toward you believers. Just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging and imploring each one of you as a father would his own children, so that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into his kingdom, into his own kingdom and glory." Paul looked at that situation, said, "We had a chance to take some money to be supported in our work." And this is an example that we're going to go over a little bit more in detail, but I bring it up in a preliminary fashion at this point in our lesson to show that Paul says very clearly here that we suffered hardship for the sake of preaching you the gospel. And we were okay with that because it brings glory to God and it shows what his kingdom is all about. Paul understood that in his life. In the book of Ephesians, in the letter of Paul to the Ephesians, chapter 4, Ephesians 4, verse 28, Paul says, "He who steals," and this is what he taught. Paul has shown in action how he is willing to go the extra mile, while he is willing to lay down his rights. But he preaches that as well in Ephesians 4 and verse 28. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with the one who has need. You know, the opposite of stealing is not stealing. The opposite of stealing is voluntarily giving what is yours to someone else. Because stealing is taking something that is not rightfully yours from someone else. And so Paul says, you used to steal. Now, instead of taking what is rightfully someone else's, you give what is rightfully yours to someone else. And Paul says that to the Ephesians. He also has that same concept in mind when he talks to the Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul is talking about a problem in the Corinthian church that had come up concerning eating meat. And some people were comfortable with eating meat that had been sacrificed to idols, and some people were not comfortable with that. And so Paul, in preaching to them, says in verse 4, therefore, concerning the eating of things sacrificed to idols, we know that there is no such thing as an idol in the world, and that there is no God but one. He says, yes, those who understand that meat is just meat, and I can eat it, and there's no harm in that, you're right, we understand that. That's very good and well. You can eat meat, no problem. Continue down in chapter 7. However, in verse 7, however, not all men have this knowledge, but some, being accustomed to the idol until now, eat food as if it were sacrificed to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. Skip on down to verse 11. For through your knowledge, he who is weak, let's read in verse 10. If someone sees you having knowledge, eating, dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? For through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined, the brother for whose sake Christ died. And so by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. Paul says, it is fine for you to eat meat. You know that. You understand that. You're clean in your conscience. That's great. Give up what you know is right for your brother. They don't understand it. They haven't come to that knowledge yet. Does their knowledge need to be corrected? Yes. But until they do, sacrifice what you know you have the right to do for the good of your brother. Paul was able to preach the same thing that he taught. Paul understood what it meant to go the extra mile, and certainly what Jesus preached, he also did as well in his life. In the book of Philippians, chapter 3, this is Paul speaking about Jesus. Philippians chapter 3, beginning in verse 2, he is using Christ as an example, and I want us to notice the example of Christ specifically. He says, beginning in verse 2, chapter 2 and verse 3. I have the wrong thing up on the slide. Chapter 2 and verse 3. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Jesus had every right to be seated next to God. He had every right to be called God in heaven. But instead of taking what was rightfully his, instead of rightfully sitting on the throne with God and not coming down and not giving care about the people on this earth, he said, I'm going to lay down my position with God. I'm going to give that up, even though it's rightfully mine, and I'm going to be made a man. And not only am I going to be made a man, which is lower than God, I'm going to be made a man who is abused and mistreated for the sake of other men. He endured the cross knowing that it would be made right. He laid aside all of his rights as a man. If you look at the trial, which you can go into detail, and look at the Jewish laws and look at the things involved and what they were supposed to do as far as giving someone a fair trial, most of the laws were broken with Jesus. They did it overnight. People hadn't met properly, and they sped through it, didn't let him defend himself like he ought to have been able to, and so on and so forth. And so many rules and so much injustice suffered. Jesus never spoke up and said, hey, this is my right for you guys to do this the right way. That's what you owe me. He said, no, they're not doing it right, but this is going to, but I'm not so concerned with earthly justice. Why was Jesus not so concerned with earthly justice? Because first of all, it was going to be to the glory of God. It was going to spread God's kingdom. Secondly, he was going to get justice anyways. Because ultimately, God will make everything right. And so just because some humans messed up the justice that he deserved doesn't mean that God was going to mess it up. And that's important for us to understand when we're giving up our rights for the sake of others, is that sometimes that's going to happen, but it's not going to go unnoticed. Everything that has been wrong will be made right. And so Jesus, as he's on the cross, and as we as even noted in our sermon this morning, in Psalm 22, he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? But if you continue to go in that psalm, Jesus is not just referencing the fact that he is forsaken. He also, he is referencing the entire psalm. And in that psalm, yes, that person is forsaken, but they are also ultimately taken care of. And so if you go to Psalm 22 and look at verse 24, as the psalm is coming to a close, he says, for he has not despised nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted, nor has he hidden his face from him. But when he cried to him for help, he heard. Jesus knew that, yes, I'm not being heard right now, but God is going to hear me. God does hear me, and God's going to make it right. And ultimately, he was justified because he was raised from the dead and seated at the right hand of God. God understood and heard Jesus' plea for justice. So even when it looks like our injustice will not be made right, we need to make sure that as we're thinking about going the extra mile, that we understand the big picture. That yes, sometimes things are going to happen that aren't right, but you have to swallow your pride when it is called for and do what is going to glorify God in his name. And so with some of those things in mind about the extra mile and what it takes and what it means and what it does not mean, I just want to take a look at a couple observations in the rest of this lesson this evening, make a couple observations about the extra mile. First of all, going the extra mile, if we do that, if we're able to let our rights be violated temporarily for the sake of others, it's going to make a statement about our motives. It's going to keep you blameless in the eyes of the world. And that is an important thing as Christians, because as people who are claiming to represent God, as people who are claiming to represent the Messiah, it is important that our reputation and that the things we do be above reproach. And this is not something, a principle, a concept that is only people in the Bible understood. This is a common concept. If a judge is presiding over a case that he has some sort of potential personal interest in, say a judge has his son that is accused of something, and the case is assigned to that judge. Well, he has every right as a judge to take that case on. But what will happen is the judge will give up that case and said, I recuse myself from this case. That even though it's my job, even though I could take this case if I wanted to, for the sake of making things look, sake of justice being upheld and making things look like they ought to, I'm not going to try this case because I don't want someone to point the finger at me and blame me if my son gets off on this count. And so that's a concept that we understand. Many of us have probably at some point or another been approached by someone with a great network marketing scheme. That all these great things that can happen. Well, if you, I sign you up under me and you sign so many people up under you, then you're going to, all the money accumulates and it just, pyramid scheme, everything comes up to you and you make a lot of money off of this. And so you say, okay, well, where can I sign? Well, you sign up under me. The point is to get you to sign up under them because they want the money. Now, if that person came to you and said, this is just a great business opportunity, all I'm concerned is this is something that is right up your alley, and this is something that I know you can be passionate about, and I just want you to have this opportunity. I'm going to sign you up under someone else because I'm not concerned about making money for myself. I'm just concerned that you find a job and a business that you can do well at and you can enjoy. If someone were going to go the extra mile in a marketing scheme, it would look something like that. But you would say to your friend or to whoever it was who approached you, they're not doing it for the money. I can't blame them for telling me about this opportunity because they're sincerely concerned only about my interest. They've made that clear because they've taken their interests out of the picture. And so when we do that, when we are able to submit ourselves to doing what we ought to, even though we might deserve it, even though in our conscience it may be fine. I may have something to tell you that is perfectly in my conscience, truly is for your benefit alone. And I may be comfortable in that. But I'm going to go beyond that to prove to you, to show you that I am trying to do something for your benefit. And Paul, as we said, referenced earlier, Paul did this with the Thessalonians. If you want to turn over to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 in verse 8, he's talking about the time he spent among them, and he says, 2 Thessalonians 3 verse 8, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it, but with labor and hardship we kept working night and day so that we would not be a burden to any of you. Not because we do not have the right to do this, but in order to offer ourselves as a model for you so that you would follow our example. Paul says we could have taken bread from you, we could have taken things from you, but we didn't because we don't want you to blame us or accuse us of having motives that we don't have. Turn over a couple pages to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. In verse 5, Paul says, for we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is witness. There were some people, preachers even, maybe of the gospel by this time, who had gone around and were preaching the gospel for their own gain, for their own benefit, for their own glory. And aside from the gospel, there were people that would just go around speaking their philosophy or whatever it was they had to sell to people. And they would do this for their own glory, for their own pocketbooks. And that's an easy way to make some money. I just have to tell you some interesting things you never thought about before. Paul says, you can't accuse me of being that because I proved myself not to do that with you. It wasn't about greed. It wasn't about myself. Continue on down in verse 6. Nor did we seek glory from men, either from you or from others, even though as apostles of Christ, we might have asserted our authority. We could have, as apostles, as someone who God has blessed with this position in his kingdom, we could have used that to glorify ourselves. We could have used that to take money, to take things from people. But we didn't do that. Instead, in verse 7, we proved to be gentle among you. And so Paul claims that he is blameless in what he did. And he can prove that he is blameless. Because his actions have shown that he's not concerned with money, he's not concerned with himself. By taking what he rightfully could have done, he proved to them that his motives were pure. And we can do the same thing in our lives. As Christians, the way we do things matters. It's not just that we do something that is right, that we know in our conscience is right, but the way you do it matters as well. If we have a problem or an issue where someone is wrong and we have the right answer, to go to that person in the right spirit, it makes a difference. To go to them showing that it's not about my glory, it's not about me proving you wrong, it's just about us trying to get the truth and trying to help one another. Going the extra mile will make sure that we're not accused of being something we're not. We can gain a lot of integrity if we'll just temporarily put our rights aside for the sake of others. But not only does going the extra mile keep you blameless, allow people to see, allow others to see God's people without able to accuse them of anything, going the extra mile is focused on other people. It is other-centered. And I say that because as we start off this evening, going the extra mile is a saying that we have in our society. And often it's about doing whatever it is at work that you need to do for your job. And I don't want to discourage us from taking that saying and going the extra mile at our jobs or doing everything you can in whatever it is that you undertake just because it might benefit you. That's okay if you reap the rewards of working hard. Going the extra mile may very well benefit us in some ways, but the primary motive is not for our benefit. It is for the benefit of others. And doing that extra mile, doing the extra things can be for self-glorification if we're not careful. We do all the extra things at work. We stay over. We do things that aren't even our task to do. We go that extra mile, and then we go when it's time for a pay raise and say, I want more money because look at what I've done. Or I want to be recognized for what I've done. But then we don't get that raise, and we feel like, well, I did all that work for nothing. You've just proven that your extra work was not for the benefit of the company, but for your own benefit. There's a commercial that's been on recently. I saw it once. Something to the effect of a man has gone so many days, so many years without missing a day of work, thousands of days without missing work. And they say, oh, we're going to reward you for that. Here's a certificate. They hand him that certificate, and he's not very happy about it. He said, this is all I get for being here every single day is this lousy certificate? And sometimes we think the same thing when we put our rights aside, when we say, I did all this work for you, and where's my glory? Well, going the extra mile is not for our own glory, but for God's, and it's for other people. And again, in Paul's situation with the Thessalonians, he shows that going the extra mile, putting aside what was rightfully his, was purely for the sake of the Thessalonians. Yes, I have the right to take money from you. I have the right to be supported by you, but I'm not taking it because I'm more concerned about you. And so in chapter 3 of 1 Thessalonians, verse 5, 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 5, he says, for this reason, when I could endure it no longer, I also sent to find out about your faith, for fear that the tempter might have tempted you and our labor would be in vain. Paul says, my concern was for you. I wanted to make sure that you guys were doing well in the faith. But in verse 6, now that Timothy has come to us from you and has brought us good news of your faith and love, and that you always think kindly of us, longing to see us just as we also long to see you. For this reason, brethren, in all our distress and affliction, we were comforted about you through your faith. For now we really live if you stand firm in the Lord. For what thanks can we render to God for you in return for all the joy with which we rejoice before our God on your account, as we night and day keep praying most earnestly that we may see your face and may complete what is lacking in your faith. That's a declaration from Paul there that we are so concerned about your faith. And hopefully, Paul says, we've proven that to you in the way we've acted among you. This wasn't about us. It wasn't about our glory. It wasn't about anything that benefited us. It was all for your benefit. I wanted you to know the things that the gospel has to offer and what you, the promises that God has for those who will believe. He's so happy to hear the report that he feels the need at the end, as we just read, to thank God. It's been such a joyous report that all his efforts have borne some sort of fruit that he has to thank God for it. in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 22. 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 22, Paul says, "To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that I may by all means save some. I do all things for the sake of the gospel, so that I may become a fellow partaker of it." And we need to have that attitude in us that was in Paul and that was in Christ Jesus. That whatever it takes to spread God's gospel, whatever it takes to show people what a follower of God is, to show people what it means to be a citizen of the kingdom of heaven, I'm going to do it. And if it means that my rights are trampled on, so be it. Let's make sure, brothers and sisters, that we are walking blamelessly in our motives and seeking the good of others. As we said, we don't have to be concerned about being wronged in this process, because ultimately we know God's going to make those wrongs right one day. If not on this earth, then on Judgment Day. And we have to make sure that we follow that example as well. So by way of invitation this evening, I want to ask those of you here who have not entered into that kingdom, what going the extra mile can mean to you. What is it that Jesus has done for you? Jesus came down, humbled himself, gave up everything that was due to him for your sake. And if you will join God's people through the waters of baptism, you will be joining a people who are trying to imitate that in their lives as well. A people, a group of Christians here that are working to do whatever it takes for the benefit of one another. And if there are those here who have been baptized, and maybe you haven't been going the extra mile, maybe you haven't been trying to be part of a culture that looks towards your brethren before it looks towards yourself, you have the opportunity, if you've done something in a way that that needs our prayers, needs our study, you have an opportunity to come forward. If there's anything we can do for you this evening, won't you come now while we stand, while we sing?